Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
Hello, this is David Lee from Prevent Connect, and I'm really pleased this afternoon to be able to talk with Christine Gidich of Ohio University and Alan Berkowitz, who's a consultant who is working with the Department of the Navy advising around sexual assault prevention. And what we're going to talk about today is an article that's going to be published in the June 2011 issue of the journal Violence Against Women titled Preventing Sexual Aggression Among College Men: An Evaluation of a Social Norms and Bystander Intervention Program. And this will be part of an issue of the journal Violence Against Women that's going to be focusing primarily on bystander programs to prevent sexual violence. And so it's really exciting to see how important the bystander issue within the research literature. So it's a great opportunity. Chris, can you first talk about what were you planning to do with this research when you decided to begin this project?
We began this project, and I want to mention at the outset that it was funded by the Centers for Disease Control. And the purpose of this project really was to evaluate dual-pronged approach to address violence on college campuses. And so what we did in this study is we targeted first-year dormitories, and we administered Allen's men's program to the men in the dorms, and then we administered risk reduction program developed by myself and my colleagues at Ohio University to the women in the same dormitories. And we also had control dormitories that were part of the study. They filled out outcome measures, but they did not get the program.
What you were doing was focusing on both working with men and women separately, but making sure that you reach both men and women, right?
That's exactly right. We really saw it as a community intervention because we targeted men and women who were residing in the same dormitories.
What we're going to be talking about today is the men's component. As that research is going to be released on the women's program, we'll check back in with you, Chris, and be able to learn about that piece. Can you describe how many people participated in this research?
We had almost 1,300 participants overall, and of those 1,300 participants, about half, 635, were men. And then with these 635 men, half participated in the program, and then the other half comprised our control group. We had a number of outcome measures, and we administer the outcome measures at baseline, so before they had the program. And then we also administered the outcome measures 4 months and 7 months following the program. We measured self-reported rates of sexual aggression. We measured rape attitudes. And then we measured men's perceptions of their peers' behavior. And then we also measured men's bystander behavior, their exposure to sexually aggressive media, and their association with sexually aggressive peers.
Alan, let's go to you now and talk a little bit about what the program was that was delivered to the men at this college campus that you were studying.
The program is really meant to be a synthesis of best practice and what we know from the prevention literature. So, for example, it's all male, single gender. It's interactive with a lot of discussion, it's peer facilitated, and it focuses on the peer climate in which the assaults take place. So that's what the literature suggests is important. We also know that while a few men commit most of the assaults, their behavior takes place in a peer environment that either encourages or discourages it, and a lot of the impact of that peer environment is based on perceptions or more accurately, misperceptions. In other words, there's a lot of research now that shows that what men think other men think or do influences men a lot, even when that's wrong. So we try to do a number of things. We taught men about consent, not with the goal of them making sure they have consent, which is important, but to be able to notice when other men didn't have consent. And then we attempted to give men accurate information about what the men in the group and on campus felt about different things in order to correct the misperceptions that we knew were inhibiting men from doing the right thing. And finally, we actually tried to teach the men bystander intervention skills. So it had multiple elements, and In addition, there were some warm-up exercises in the beginning that served to make it comfortable for people to speak very honestly and openly.
Well, you talked about in the articles how this is a very interactive process, and it's not just a presentation of information.
The interactive nature is very important, and also it supports one of our theoretical assumptions, which is that most men want to do the right thing and are intolerant of men who violate women, but most men don't know that other men feel that way. So by giving men a chance to talk and say what they really feel, you reveal the true norm, which is that most people think certain things aren't okay. And then you're sending a message to the predators who are hearing from their peers that their behavior is unacceptable, and it sends a message to the larger group of men that I'm not alone in feeling uncomfortable with this kind of behavior.
And it's interesting the way that this research was constructed, because you actually broke, and you had limited numbers, but you looked at the audience, looked at what the experience is of the men's self-reported acts of self-aggression, of sexual aggression prior to this, to be able to see how they might react differently.
And we also did a little survey of the workshop participants in the beginning, and we asked them about themselves and what they thought was true of the other men in the group. And then in the course of the workshop, the facilitators told the men the truth about themselves, including how they perceived each other incorrectly. And by the way, it was mentioned, but I want to emphasize that my role was to train the facilitators, but the facilitators were peers or graduate students very close in age.
Great. So, and how long was this program?
There was a lot of time spent taking the research instruments, but the program itself, the actual workshop, is around an hour and a half. And then there was a four-month booster session where we tried to give a shot in the arm to things we thought would be improved by the workshop.
And another part of our behavioral theory does suggest that booster sessions are important to be able to sustain change that people might be contemplating. So great. So Chris, can you talk about what were some of the results from this, as this program was implemented in this campus? What were some of the things that you found?
Well, we found a number of positive outcomes for men in the program group compared to men in the control group. For example, we found that over the seven-month follow-up period, men who had the program were more likely to perceive that their peers would intervene when faced with inappropriate behavior in other men compared to the control group. They also found participation in sexual aggression less reinforcing. They also reported fewer associations with sexually aggressive peers over the seven-month follow-up period. They, relative to the control group, the program group participants also indicated less exposure to sexually aggressive media. And then finally, last and I think a very important finding, is that over the four-month follow-up, men who had the program relative to the control group, men indicated that they were less likely to perpetrate sexually aggressive acts. So just one small statistic is over the four-month follow-up, almost 7% of men in the control group indicate that they had perpetrated a sexually aggressive act over this brief four-month follow-up period, whereas 1.5% of men in the program group indicated that they had perpetrated a sexually aggressive act. The seven-month follow-up, there were no differences in rates of sexual aggression for the two groups, but we really thought it was positive that at least over the short-term follow-up, the four-month follow-up, there were differences in rates of sexual aggression for program group men compared to the control group men.
What do you attribute perhaps the shift from the 4 to 7 month period?
If you think about it, there are lots of factors that influence whether a man is sexually aggressive or not. And if we want long-term change, I think perhaps we need to focus on reinforcing the message over time from multiple sources. We need to focus also on teaching men specific skills to intervene, which is a part of Alan's program, but I think evidence from other sources would suggest that the more opportunity to practice, the more the messages are reinforced, the more likely positive gains are to be maintained.
Right.
I don't know if Alan has other things to offer, but...
Yeah.
I would say that perpetrating sexual assault is very hard to change, and the fact that we reduced it by 75% in 4 months was a great success, and we did that mainly by correcting the misperceptions and creating a climate that was intolerant of the aggressive predatory behavior. But there's another threshold. The first step is, I don't like this, and I know that you don't like this, so we are in agreement that it's not okay. And the guy who's a perpetrator gets that message that it's not cool. So we create, let's call it, an inhibitory climate. But then the next step is to actually intervene when I see something that isn't correct. And what we found is that the men didn't actually intervene. They perceived that other men would intervene. They knew that they would intervene. But there's a threshold to actually teach people the skills. And as Chris said, that may require more practice over time than we were able to offer in an hour and a half. So if we were to repeat this study, we might want to build in boosters where they had more practice, as Chris said, and we might want to look at other things like maybe looking at important role models and older peers who are influential to reinforce the message. But I think it would be possible to sustain the 4 month gains longer if we had a chance to do this again and design in some new elements.
It's really interesting to think about what change we can and what does it take to really sustain change. That's one of the exciting pieces in our work on the prevention of sexual assault and intimate partner violence, is that we're getting a chance to learn new things, drawing from our knowledge about behavior change, and really look at what's going to make those changes. So, Alan, can you talk a little bit about how does this help influence people who are doing prevention work? What are some pieces that they can draw from this study to be able to help strengthen their prevention programming that they're doing?
It confirms a lot of what we already know, and it extends some of that further. And these are all things that prevention practitioners should be aware of. So, for instance, if we want to work with men, we need to do it in a supportive, interactive, non-blaming or non-defensive environment in which we ask men to be part of the solution. It has to be very interactive. I think the social norms piece is very important. There's a lot of recent literature showing the importance of the norms and the misperceptions, and this validates that. So it's very important for prevention practitioners to understand social norms theory and to create discussions in which men learn the truth about other men, which is almost always more positive than they realize. It reinforces and supports what we know from this and other research about bystander intervention theory, and at the same time it shows us that maybe it's easier said than done, but nonetheless important, and there needs to be more focus on the skills piece.
Chris, do you have any final words that you want to comment on how this study can help contribute to strengthening our prevention practice?
I think another important point is that we targeted community on our campus, and so we targeted cohesive groups men and women, which I think is also, the literature would suggest, really very important when you're focusing in, especially when you're focusing in on bystander behavior and social norms kinds of variables. So I wanted to underscore that. The other thing that I want to underscore, and, you know, this is obviously the scientist in me that I have to make one lip plug for, I think it's really important when you're doing this work ahead of time, and I know lots of times funding is limited and, you know, there may not be a lot of resources, but I think it's important ahead of time to think about how it is you're going to go about evaluating that what you're doing is actually making a difference and leading to some type of change. And I think that that's really important because we want to be able to do this type of work and build upon the work that we're doing, and by being able to demonstrate that what we're doing is making a difference and that we have some positive outcomes, I think it lends itself nicely to further work and further change in this area.
Thank you. I really enjoyed getting a chance to talk with both of you, Christine Gittich from Ohio University and Alan Berkowitz, consultant who's doing some work with the Department of the Navy around sexual assault prevention. And I want to thank you for your article, Preventing Sexual Aggression Among College Men, an Evaluation of a Social Norms and Bystander Intervention Program. I think this is really helpful, and I encourage people to read the article and the other articles that will appear in the June 2011 Journal of Violence Against Women, talking a lot about bystander programs. I think we can really use this to improve the way we do our work.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CALCASA.org.